winning the Ansari X Prize, a pilot's eye view. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We're already coming up on the third anniversary of the flights of Spaceship One, the effort which claimed the Ansari X Prize for a team led by Bert Rutan's Scaled Composites. For those of you who've never had the chance to hear Bert Rutan and pilots Mike Melville and Brian Binney tell the story of the two flights which qualified for that prize, we have something special for you today. You may recall the X Prize required two flights to an altitude of 100 kilometers, or about 328,000 feet, within a 14-day period. A less reported rule also required the pilots to survive for 24 hours after their return from suborbital space. What you'll hear today is an audio recording made at EAA AirVenture Oshkosh's Theater in the Woods in 2006. Even without seeing the accompanying video, Mike Melville's narration of his experience during the first flight on Wednesday, September 28, 2004, will paint a picture for you. This was the flight which reached its target altitude despite a series of 29 uncommanded rolls.
You know, when you're sitting in that thing and it takes off, the White Knight takes off, Brian's at the controls, and I'm sitting there with very much nothing to say to anybody and nervous, wondering if I'm going to be coming back down from this little episode. You got a lot on your mind.
Okay.
Okay, we're being cleared to land.
And we've got Elevon forward, guards are up.
Okay, so I'm going to push the stick all the way forward to assure that we get separation from the White Knight.
3, 2, 1, release.
Good, clean release. Arm it. Fire it. Pull the nose up. You've got 3.2 Gs on your back. About 3 Gs, eyeballs down. And you feel like you're doing a loop. But you fly it on instruments, you look at the gauges, and you take the velocity vector and run it up the lubber line and put it on the red steering dot.
20 seconds left.
And that seems simple, but it's not as easy as you think it might be. There's a lot of noise, a lot of vibration. Very, very exciting thing to do. You know, for my old heart, it was really pitter-pattering there. I think I had a heart rate, what was it, Mike, 150-something? Yeah. I ride my bike a lot, and I ride at 160, so I wasn't too worried about that.
Coming through 45 seconds.
Okay, at this point in time, the pilot sees that the blue sky has gone black. Okay, you can see there's a little vibration going on as we get into a bit of an unstable burn of the engine. About that time, the airplane departed from controlled flight. At at Mach 2.7, we did a snap roll and continued rolling for 29 rolls.
Copy that.
Shut the motor down. We're out of the atmosphere now. We put the feather up. You got to sit there and wait because you want the feather up before you start using the reaction control system. I didn't shut it down any earlier because Bert had told me that there was no reason to ever shut it down if it was pointed up. And I could see that we were still pointed up. He said, the only time I'll accept you turning it off is if it's pointed down. So anyway, the feather gets all the way up. I engaged the A and B system and used both systems of the reaction control system to bring it under control. I was able to arrest the roll rate completely to nothing, and we still had a little bit of fuel left in the reaction control system. I think it scared everybody about as bad as it scared me. You can see from the view that you have a beautiful view. That's the L.A. Basin with the clouds over it. The high desert coming into view now.
The energy height did work.
And we knew that we'd gone high enough. Our predictor said 334. We actually went to 338,000 feet. There again is the L.A. Basin, the Pacific Ocean. An unbelievable view. And very, very quiet. Once you shut that motor off, you're instantly at zero G. So anything loose in the cabin is going to float away. And as you saw in one of the videos that Paul showed, you know, I released some M&Ms so people could see what that was like. The neat thing that Brian and I both did on our flights was we took some pictures. with a Canon camera, and we got some really great shots. Okay, we've got the roll stopped.
Radar altitude was 338.
How are we doing on time?
Well, it really did some weird things towards the end.
Yeah, there were a lot of rates going on there. That's a great job you did.
Doug Shane, one of my good friends, and he's the voice of Mission Control, and I like to say the voice of sanity. If Doug tells you something, you know it's not a lie. He would never lie to you. So you got to believe what he tells you. Mike Alsbury sitting next to him is the guy that points out to Doug if anything's wrong. Doug feeds it to me. Here's my camera. I should say... Dave Moore's camera. And we put it up against the windows, close as we could, and took some pictures. I got one out of about eight that I took that was worthwhile, and Brian got several really, really good ones.
Everything's great in the back end. My propulsion is cool.
All of this time, you're at zero G. You're floating over the top of your apogee. And then you start, after about 4 minutes, you're starting to head down big time.
Here you land to Hummy.
The nice thing about it is, with the feather up, there's absolutely nothing for the pilot to do to make sure that you have a safe re-entry. The feather will guide you into a safe re-entry if you put your hands behind your head and cross your legs and don't use the rudders. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. But you'll see any pilot with a stick in his hand is going to try to do something. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's doing something. But believe me, it doesn't make any difference at all. You can see the feather is starting to bite into the atmosphere and straighten the airplane out. You go all the way out to above Mach 3 coming down. It gets tighter and tighter, and it finally just runs in like it's on rails with a shrieking, howling sound as the wind goes by. Very, very adrenaline type of a ride. You know, better than most of these roller coaster rides for sure. And you do pick up a little G. You go out to about, I went to about 5.2 Gs. I think Brian was about 5.5 Gs. And about pulled the mask off my face due to the Gs. And then pretty soon you're back into the rumbling and bumping because of going through transonic to getting slowed down to subsonic. You get a lot of spillage over the wing. And, you know, the wing is at about a 70 degree angle of attack, so it's stalled. And you've got horrible flow over the leading edge of the wing, and it buffets into the tails, and it rattles your brain bucket, something terrible. And then you get down low enough, put the feather down, lock the trailing edge, and it's a piece of cake after that. You can see some of the bouncing going on here. We love the bouncing, though, don't we, Brian? Because once you get that bouncy feeling, you know you're back where you can survive. Feather's coming down. It's very important that the feather comes down. Otherwise, the airplane goes all the way to the ground. You can't really make it to the airport. At this point, you want to lock the trailing edge. There we go. Uh-oh. One more little gust upset on the way home. And 29 rolls wasn't enough. I had to do one more just to round it out to 30. Short final here. Chuck Coleman's on my wing, calling out the wheel height. And that was taken from Chuck's extra, and I really appreciated his help and the guidance getting me back. Thank you so much. Let's see if we can run the next DVD.
Thank you, Mike. Of course, our dilemma then was that we did have something that had not happened before. This is a supersonic departure. We did identify that it happened. Only at very low angle of attack. We'd never been at negative lift supersonically. And once we identified that, we immediately went to the simulator and had the pilots fly this, and all the pilots could depart the airplane just like Mike did, and they could also fly the trajectory such that they're keeping positive lift near the end of it and didn't depart it. Knowing that we could fly the mission again even with a departure and win the XPRIZE, and knowing that we could probably fly it smoothly if with a different trajectory, we kept on our schedule to fly on Monday when this flight was flown the previous Wednesday. And that was to the surprise of a lot of folk. But keep in mind, this looks real dangerous to do a snap roll at Mach 2.7. That snap roll started at 100 knots. And by the time it had gone around a couple times, it was only 40 knots. And most of that rolling is just a space tumble. Okay, so it wasn't really like a 29 roll snap roll in the common sense. Okay, anyway, let me turn it over to Brian, and here we are now on Monday. What?
Yes.
Did I say something funny? Yeah.
You know, it was, you hear what Bert said? He wasn't there. Let me tell you.
all I meant was that an airplane that snap rolls in the atmosphere, while it's snap rolling you, it's got aerodynamic loads, and it's throwing you back and forth. But we were just rotating in space.
Mike made it real clear, you were not there.
No, I wasn't there. I was enjoying the view that you're going to see, which we saw in real time from the tail camera in Mission Control. And believe me, we seemed to be worried about it more than you were.
No, that's true. You know, I was a little scared, though, I got to tell you. When it started rolling like that, my hand went right away to the switch to shut it off. Then I remembered the words from Bert, don't shut it off if it's pointed up. And I thought, man, he'll fire me if I turn it off.
We're listening to Mike Melville and Brian Binney describe their flights aboard Spaceship One, which won the Ansari X Prize in September and October of 2004. We'll hear Brian talk about the second flight in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com. Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 and 400 are now available with either an Abadine or Garmin electronic cockpit. The new Garmin G1000 equipped Columbia 350 and 400 have just been introduced with the new ReadyPad. While the G1000 panel integrates all navigation and flight instruments into two high-resolution screens, incorporating GPS, nav, comm, autopilot, transponder, and flight director into one easy-to-use package. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. We're listening today to the pilots of Spaceship One tell their stories at Air Ventures Theater in the Woods. On September 29, 2004, Mike Melville flew Burt Rutan's Spaceship One to an altitude of over 337,000 feet. All that was left to claim the $10 million Ansari X Prize was to do the same thing again within 14 days. On Monday, October 4th, pilot Brian Binney strapped in for his attempt not only to win the X Prize, but to break a record set by Joseph A. Walker in August 1963, when he flew the X-15 rocket plane to an altitude of 354,000 feet. We'll hear Brian's story, then Burt Rutan will wrap up.
So we didn't really need to do any magic on the next flight, but we changed the way we were going to fly the vehicle because the press made such a big deal out of it, and just why not, for good measure, show that we can really ride the bull. And that's really what 17P was all about.
Snubbing about a quarter turn. It feels pretty good out there. I'm not sure whether or not you felt it or not.
This is a Monday morning. Well, this is the weigh-in. You know, weight was everything. We tracked the weight of the vehicle to a hundredth of a pound. And right after weigh-in, my mother-in-law came up to me with a 12-ounce cup of coffee and gave me a big hug and spilt it all down my flight suit and back. We figured 12 ounces about 300 feet at apogee. I figure I'm about even with my mother-in-law.
Good takeoff. Gears on the way up. Okay.
Now, I flew the White Knight on this one, and I hadn't ever flown it with the spaceship on there. I don't know if anybody remembered that, but they said, hey, here are the keys. Go out and take Brian up.
So here we got release, arm, fire. You know, we never thought we could hit the White Knight. We kind of let that slip out of our mindset. But we came pretty close, and Matt Steinmetz became pretty famous with his holy crap, that was close call. Of course, from the spaceship standpoint, you got no sense of that. You're going through the motions of trying to make sure you get the nose pointed up. You want to get to 60 degrees real quickly, and then you want to control it from 60 to 80 degrees flight path angle, and you do that by running the stabs back down for a little bit and then running them back up again. And that became part of the orchestration with Mission Control, and that's how Doug and I spent the weekend, was getting that sense of timing and judgment down to control that gamma. And you're holding it until you get to about 80 degrees nose up, and then you start pulling in the trim again to keep the angle of attack on the vehicle. That allows you to maintain directional control and enhance any tendency to roll it.
Roll right. 300,000.
Don't you like that howling sound, Brian?
And it sounds like a wounded cat or something like that. We may have to play some elevator music on the spaceship too, just to appease people. We have a shutdown call. We kind of delay one or two potatoes for good measure.
And the rates look good. Okay, copy that. You're going to want to track north through the entry. You're just across the orange line on the south. You're good east-west on.
Okay, see that.
Okay.
Once again, the same remarkable view, a wonderful experience, a full body experience, weightlessness, the lack of noise, the lack of vibration, the blackness, the lightness, that blue ribbon of light. Nice steady rates. One of the XPRIZE requirements to actually get the $10 million was you had to live 24 hours after the flight. That's true. And what you'll soon see is a little victory in Mission Control. Bert realizing even with my landing skills, I can probably manage that 24-hour requirement, having passed through 328.
Northwest for the entry, Brian.
Okay, Doug, copy that, northwest.
Not great. Feel good?
I'm feeling great.
Okay.
Better get the camera out.
And you really do feel great. You work pretty hard to get up there. You get kind of beat up and shook around. And
XFT record.
The contrast is very striking. There goes Joe Walker's 1963 record. That's how well the motor performed. And another, again, you look at that view and you could just soak it in all day long. And 5 minutes is a pretty good chunk of time, but... Newton had it right. What goes up must come down, and soon you gotta return. But the neat part about this vehicle is the return is literally sort of hands-free. You don't have to be thinking too hard. You can still be enjoying that experience.
Okay, flight position is coming downhill through 350, and current position is 5 southwest, south, correction, 5 south of the bullseye. It looks like the entry point is between main base and north base.
Feeling pretty good about it here, Brian.
Yep. The one little hazard with this new profile that we flew was the FAA's little 2 mile square reentry box, which we hadn't done a great job hitting. And it became another casualty on the final flight, but we kind of run out of excuses and paperwork, but we knew we didn't probably need to do any more of that. And it was a good trade-off.
That was great. Doing okay?
Steady as a rock coming back down. Just look at that.
Oh, it's,
it's supersonic coming down and
again.
Nothing's happening. The feather is really a remarkable configuration.
And it's northwest. You want for the heading, right?
Affirmative. I was just taking back at high key.
You get the noise builds up again. You end up coming down about as fast as you were going up. And it's a smooth ride until you become subsonic, and then you get that falling bathtub mode that alerts you. You're back into the real atmosphere again. You sort of hunt and chug around, and you wait until you're sort of comfortable with that, and you lower the wing. There's a whole ton of adrenaline going through the system after the rocket flight. That 5G's is you almost have to look at the meter to realize that it's really there. It's not a significant factor.
And roll right if you can, that'd be good.
Okay.
Doug's still trying to get me to turn northwest back to the field.
There's 70,000 radar, tether at your discretion. Might give it another couple seconds.
And you can tell if you don't have that impression, this is really a team effort to fly this vehicle. There's a lot of synergy going on with mission control, a lot of communications, a lot of sort of feel-good dialogue that reinforces your beliefs and what you've trained for in the simulator. And without our simulator, this program, I doubt seriously could have happened in six flights.
You're going to want to start a right turn to the nose as soon as you recover.
Copy.
Radar shows 54,000.
Feather comes down. I think we sort of delayed about 60,000 feet to bring it down. Uneventful. The locks are in place. It's about one of the last events that might be able to bite you. And then it's a landing pattern.
Here comes secure.
Good.
Now, Mike on final always does this yeehaw thing, and I wasn't quite in that league after my first powered flight, so a little bit of holding the breath until the wheels were down. Chuck Coleman on the wing, doing a great job giving those wheel height calls.
You guys put your hearts in it, not just
and we're home.
And you put your talents in it. The important thing about today's accomplishment is this is not an end, it's just a very good beginning. Yeah. Whoa! Hey.
And here comes the champagne. Thank you.
Okay.
The most important thing. The most important thing that we were able to do over this program is to not just go out and show that little guys can build a home-built airplane and fly a manned space flight. The most important thing that we did is to go after three significant generic breakthroughs. The carefree reentry, the hybrid motor, and the air launch, because each one of those can increase the safety of flying the public to space by a factor of 10. And we are very confident, particularly since we do have very good solutions, not tested yet, good solutions to the flying qualities problems that cause the snap roll. We have some very good solutions, not tested yet, to show that we have solutions to the problems that we did have with the hybrid motor. And we are developing right now an operable system that can be flown day in and day out and can be flown over and over and over and over again at very low operating costs and at a safety level that we believe that this industry can offer space flights to the public as safe as the early airlines were, which is 100 times safer than all manned space flight. Not 10, 100 times safer. That's our goal. And that's where our work is going to be focused over the next several years. And we have very high confidence that we can do it. It's not going to be easy, but I believe that we took a lot more risk doing this program than we're going to take in the coming years to develop spaceships that can be sold to space line operators so that you can buy tickets and that you can do this right there yourselves. And I expect that a whole bunch of you out there
10, 12 years from now, we'll be astronauts. Thank you very much.
You can still find edited video of the record-setting flights of Spaceship One at the Scaled Composites website, www.scaled.com. You'll also find a link there from wherever you found this Aerocast. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.